Good morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne LaGorrie on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLIW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And each show is archived on my website at annelagorrie.com and distributed on my podcast via Audio Boom and iTunes. This morning, you will hear my conversation with Yanni Hare, the Executive Vice President of Development of the Israel Tennis and Education Centers Foundation, one of the largest social service agencies in Israel. Their mission is to empower all children across Israel to dream and to build bridges to create a more peaceful and stronger society. The organization is organizing several fundraisers in the Hamptons, and Yanni will explain why this organization that teaches young people tennis and so much more, why it is so important, especially during these chaotic and unpeaceful times. You'll also hear from Allison Metcalf of Tourism Ireland and from golf writer Jack Milko about golfing in Ireland and why you should plan your next golf trip there. So many options, so many incredible links and parkland courses, fine hospitality, and such a great variety of accommodations and cuisine. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Sports Interview with Anne LaGorrie. You've heard me talk about golfing in Ireland and how Ireland is one of my favorite destinations for golf for many reasons. And joining me now to talk about the Irish golf experience is Allison Metcalf of Tourism Ireland. Allison, welcome to Talking Golf.
Great to be back, Anne, as always.
It's always great to visit with you. And I'm always astounded at how many incredible golf courses there are in Ireland. And I read where there are over 400 golf courses, which is remarkable for such a small country. And one third of the world's links courses are on the Emerald Isle. It's just outstanding that golf is just such a big part of the country where you're from.
Absolutely. I mean, as you mentioned, we've got one third of the world's links courses. And that's, you know, when golfers are looking at where they want to travel, particularly from North America, it is the links courses that they want. But I suppose what we always like to talk about is obviously we've got great golf. But it is also about the 19th hole and the other things to do around a golfing vacation. So Ireland obviously is home to world championship golf courses, but it's also home to a lot of other hidden gem courses as well. And I think for golfers that have been to the island of Ireland or played some of those championship courses, there's also good reasons to go back and get off the beaten track and support other regions around the island of Ireland. So we're very proud of what we have to offer. We're very proud of, obviously, the Irish golfers out on tour who are great ambassadors for us. I think what we're trying to do here is promote the complete package, all of the ingredients for golf vacation. Great golf, great links courses, you expect that, great hospitality, great places to stay, and fun things to do off the golf course.
Well, I've been going for years, as you know, and, you know, golfers knew about, you know, Belly Bunion, Portmarnock, Lahinch, Old Head was, you know, a newer golf course back in the day, Royal County Down, Royal Port Rush. But now, you know, that what were once the hidden gems are really well known to American golfers. You know, Carn amongst the high dunes on the West Coast. Then you have the nine holes at Cruet Island, Belly Liffin, Enniscrone, Dunebag, Tralee, The Island. So many to choose from. There's just an abundance of wealth regarding links courses and parkland courses in Ireland.
Absolutely. And I think the great thing about Ireland is that you can actually base yourself in different regions. So for people that have sort of done some of the signature courses, for example, I mean, for those folks that actually want to base themselves in the city, for example, you can base yourself in Belfast, and from Belfast you can get to play Royal County Down, Ardglass, you can get up to the north Antrim Coast, the Causeway Coast, and Playroyal, Portrush, Port Stewart, Castle Rock, Ballycastle. But you can also play some of those really tremendous parkland courses like Malone or Royal Belfast, which is the oldest golf course in Ireland. Same thing from Dublin. Again, you can base yourself there, and you've got great opportunities to play. You can play the K Club, you can go to Port Marnock, you can do Royal Dublin, you can play the European, and still have the opportunity to have nightlife back in the city. So there's the urban basis, but then there's also, as you mentioned, the Northwest is very popular. We talk about hidden gems. I don't really like to use that term anymore because, as you say, they're not so hidden, but it also possibly implies that the golf isn't as great, and it's fantastic golf, fantastic links courses. So whether it is Ballyliffin or Carn or Enniscrone or any of those courses in the Northwest, again, you can base yourself and drive out each day. And I think sometimes there's a myth that in Ireland you have to keep driving to play golf. You can base yourself in a different region and go out and play at least three or four different courses, so you don't need to be uprooting every day and packing up, and that makes the whole experience a lot more enjoyable. I think that's a factor worth mentioning.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you the best way to plan a golfing trip to Ireland. And as you have alluded to, it's really, I think, picking a region or two and then just kind of staying in that region, whether you're, playing courses around Dublin or you go to the Southwest, which is one of my favorite regions in Ireland. You can fly into Shannon at that point, or you go up to the Northwest. And the last trip in May when I went, I started in the Southwest and Doonbeg, Lahinch, and then drove up to Carn, which was only a couple hour drive, but it's a gorgeous drive. And driving in Ireland is one of my favorite things to do. This it's just the scenic beauty is just, I love it, and I love to drive in Ireland. You're on the left-hand side of the road. The stick shift's completely opposite. The seat in the car is completely opposite. It's just a whole cool adventure that you have to get used to. But I just love that. So, I don't you think picking a region or two and kind of staying in those areas might be the best way to organize a golfing trip to Ireland?
Absolutely. And I think, the average golf trip is probably, 7 to 9 days. So if you base yourself in two regions, that works really well. So as you said, you could be in Dublin and then head up to the Northwest coast, or you could go Dublin and then go around to the Southwest. So it's very accessible. And I think also what that gives you an opportunity to also get under the skin of the location where you decide to base yourself. So you can enjoy some of the other local experiences and attractions. And I often say when you're planning a golf trip, I mean, people ask you, what's the best way to do that? I would engage, certainly consult with a specialist golf tour operator. They can certainly make those experiences for you totally turnkey. They can put the full itinerary together for you, accommodation, transportation, sightseeing, as well as the golf, depending upon what your needs are. And our experience is really, for most golfers traveling to Ireland, most of the itineraries are customized, depending upon whether they've been before, the type of group, the type of experience that they want. So definitely consult with one of the golf tour operators. They can also secure the tee times on those signature courses, which sometimes can be difficult to secure. But so do that. And also, I would suggest visitingireland.com as well, just to get some general information in terms of what a potential route might look like.
And let's talk about some of the championships that will be on the Emerald Isle in the next couple of years. Royal Portrush, after they hosted the Open Championship in 2019, is hosting again very soon, correct?
Fantastic, absolutely. The Open Championship will be back at Royal Portrush next year, 2025. As you say, only 6 years since they successfully hosted the last Open in 2019. I was up at Royal Portrush just about a month ago, and I think the club and the course is in good shape. The development is well underway, so we're very excited about that. I mean, certainly the eyes of the world will be on Royal Portrush, and indeed just all of the great links golf course in Northern Ireland, but on the island of Ireland. I mean, it certainly does put Ireland on the map. And then in 2027, the Ryder Cup will be hosted at Adair Manor. So again, a superb parkland course, which underwent some major sort of upgrades back in 2018. The original course was designed by Robert Trent Jones, and it was Tom Fazio that made some of those upgrades. So very excited to have the rider cut back. And I think also when you look at the Open coming back to Royal Portrush, what it's also done is you're going to see the opening of a lot of new accommodation options as well for visitors. Whether you're traveling to the Open, or more importantly, whether you're going to leverage the legacy of that and travel to play Portrush either before or after the tournament, you're going to see new hotels opening up. Dunluce Lodge, which is going to be a beautiful 35-bedroom luxury property, has wonderful views over the fourth fairway. There's a new Hilton property, part of the Tapestry collection, called the Marcus Hotel, which is opening next year, about 80 plus bedrooms. So as a golfing destination, the Causeway Coastal Route is really just growing and growing in its stature, and the offering that is available to golfers continues to expand. So very exciting times for us. We're really looking forward to those two tournaments, and really the eyes of the world being on Irish golf.
2019 Open Championship. I was there. You were there.
Yep.
Irishman Shane Lowry wins it. How
Yep.
magical was that? What are your memories, Allison, from that 2019 Open Championship at Royal Portrush?
Well, I just remember just the first of all, just the pride that Ireland had in hosting that tournament. I mean, the spectators. I think I was there most days, so practice rounds as well as the tournament days. Sellout crowds. Whether people were a golfers or not, they were there. They came from all around the world, but more specifically, they came from the island of Ireland. In terms of the golf, I think it was just it was quite an emotional occasion. I think because it was 1951. I think was the last time that the Open was hosted at Royal Portrush. It was great, to see the Irish golfers here, but to see the golfers from around the world be in this part of the island of Ireland. I remember the great weather. I also remember Shane Lowry coming down the 18th when he was certainly set up to win. The rain. We had all sorts of weather. It was in July, but I think just the spirit of the tournament was fantastic. I think overall, just to have the world's media there as well, it was just phenomenal. I think that 2025 is going to be equally as good, if not better. And so I understand the RNA are expanding it, so there will be opportunities for more spectators to visit Royal Portrush. And yeah, I think it's very exciting. And even just to look at the work now that's going on at Royal Portrush around their second course, which is the Valley course at Rathmore. I mean, I think post the Open, and this work will be finished before the Open, but post the Open, the opportunities for visitors to play at Portrush are going to be significantly increased. You have two great 18-hole golf courses there, so there'll be more on offer for golfers going forward.
And I just got back from a trip literally last evening, and Royal County Down was one of the courses that we played, and they're hosting the Irish Open. I mean, this is one of the most spectacular links courses in the world, with the mountains of Mourne in the backdrop, and it's just so well regarded, and it lives up to the hype, obviously. And Rory McIlroy, as you say, committed to playing in the Irish Open. Your thoughts on, not just the Open Championship at Royal Portrush and Adair Manor hosting the Ryder Cup in 2027, but the Irish Opens go to all these great golf courses as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great to see the home open back at such esteemed courses, such signature courses, and Royal County Down. I remember being at the Irish Open when it was last hosted at Royal County Down, and seeing I think, the guys tee off, and particularly I think it the location of Royal County Down, as you said, it's stunning. It's where the ranches of Mourne sweep down to the sea. It's unique. It's a great challenge, obviously. It's often ranked as number one in the world, lots of blind tees. So I think it's just going to be tremendous. And hosting all of these tournaments just continues to profile and put a spotlight on the island of Ireland as a world-class golfing destination. Again, as we talk about the links courses, I think it's also just worth mentioning, there's some great parkland courses. We also host, I mean, we've got the Ladies Irish Open, that'll be at Carlton House. So there's a lot of other courses there. And I think when we look at Ireland, most of the Americans and North Americans would travel for the Lynx courses, but also that there's great interest in playing some of those signature Parkland courses, whether it's the K Club, which formerly hosted the Irish Open, or Carlton House, or the European. And depending on who's golfing, it's a lot more women traveling to play golf in Ireland, couples playing golf in Ireland. So there's a broad offering for visitors, and certainly the Lynx courses are certainly the primary draw. But I think that there's we're trying to sort of ensure that the breadth of that golfing experience, we get that message out there, because there is something for everybody.
Sure, Dromoland Castle. They hosted the Women's Irish Open a couple years. Just breathtaking. Just such luxury accommodations there. Mount Juliet, as you mentioned, Adare Manor. There's such a variety. And I just think that is, again, you just want to keep going over there because you can't possibly, play all of them. But it offers, a great variety of links courses, parkland courses. And accommodations from bed and breakfasts to manor homes to castles.
Exactly. As you said, there's something for everybody, everybody's taste, everybody's budget. And Ireland is very accessible. So once you arrive in Ireland, the distances aren't that great. And equally so, getting to Ireland is also very accessible from North America. And in the US, we've got direct services now from 18 gateways. So it's never been easy to get to the island of Ireland. More year-round access. We've got more direct air access into Shannon, which is really important for those golfers wanting to play in the southwest and west, and enjoy some of the great scenery along the Wild Atlantic Way. So all of those ingredients, I think, are in place. The infrastructure is good, easy to get around. The value is there, and certainly, and I think when we talk about golf, if you want to obviously play the signature courses, you will pay a certain green fee. But there's also incredible value around in some of the other links courses, some of those lesser-known courses which offer fantastic experiences. So there's still plenty of value. There's certainly availability there. But again, we do encourage people to, if you want those signature links courses, book early, just to make sure you're not disappointed.
Just back from an exciting golf adventure in Ireland, and Jack Milko, golf writer for SB Nation, also joined in the fun, and he joins us now. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hi, Anne. Pleasure to be talking with you once again after a memorable week in the Emerald Isle. Thanks so much for having me on this beautiful Sunday morning back in the city.
I know, back in the States, like from across the pond. So, what about this Irish golf trip? What impressed you the most?
What impressed me the most? That's a great question. I've been thinking a lot about this over the last 12 hours on our trip back. And if anybody ever gets a chance to go to Ireland, the one thing that always strikes out the most are the hospitality of the Irish people. Everybody welcomes you with open arms. It feels like you're going back home. Everybody's so friendly, so nice, and so welcoming. And I go back to what we from the people we met at County Louth on our first day there. And we were talking about how nice everybody is in Ireland. And somebody said, "Well, we're like this every day." And it's true. They are like this every day, because after each of the 5 days we spent there, everybody from all these different golf courses and places and restaurants and bars and all these different spots we went to, everybody was just so nice, so welcoming. And that's a testament to how much I appreciate the Irish culture and how friendly they really are.
Oh my gosh, the hospitality is really second to none for sure. And you played with a member at County Louth, and that makes it even more special, right?
I did. I did. Michael, the captain of the gentleman at County Louth, was spectacular, a great player in his own right, about a 3 handicap, and really took me to the cleaners. But he was showing us all these different spots on the golf course, where to hit, where Shane Lowry made his move on Sunday when he won as an amateur back in 2009. Talking about all these different facets of the golf course. It's amazing, at least specifically for County Louth, they have 1,500 members. And you don't have those numbers here in the States. But another cool thing I loved about Louth is its dedication and commitment to junior golf. You look around all over the golf course, you see kids everywhere, families everywhere. And it was really cool to hear Michael's perspective about the golf course and how much it continues to grow, and it will continue to grow because of its commitment to the youth level.
Right, but even though they have that many members, you don't. We never waited ever, on any of these golf courses, so it's not overcrowded. I mean, they space out the tee times enough where, you're not feeling like you're waiting forever. And but you mentioned a key word, accessibility, and over there, and you see so many young kids. In fact, the first time I ever went to Ardglass a long time ago, there were, and that, that Rory McIlroy grew up. He obviously grew up in Hollywood near there. But he played Artglass a lot and obviously has inspired just a whole generation of young talent over there. And the first time I went there were so many young people out there. And it's, they, I called them little Rorys, right? They all just wanted to be Rory. And Rory's coach, Michael Bannon, he grew up playing Artglass and he is still a member there. So yes, I mean, there's always been great accessibility, very affordable. But it just seems like more so, certainly than here, just kids just grow up playing golf there. It's affordable. There's courses everywhere. And they just, it's like something you do in your culture when you're very, very young. And I know in our country, more juniors are getting into the game, from all different kind of backgrounds. But over there, it's just something you do when when you can. Are old enough to hold a golf club, right? You just learn how to play golf, and that's why, for such a small country, they've turned up so many great golfers.
You absolutely hit the nail on the head there. And it I of the five golf courses we played, there were just kids everywhere. And I love seeing it. I've been really fortunate to be able to play this wonderful game since I was young. And the best part about golf is you will play for your entire life. I often think of my grandfather, who at 87 years old still goes out and plays 18 holes 3 days a week, and I have the good fortune to be able to still play with him. And you can play from as young as five all the way up until your last days. That's the beauty of this game. And Ireland does a great job of ensuring its youth that has those opportunities. It's just amazing. Amazing to see all the kids running around playing, pushing bags that are bigger than them. It was just that was one of my favorite parts of the week.
Right, and just seeing it's just a natural kind of passion for them, from a very early age. So, we started in Dublin, County Louth, and Sea Point, but the sheer number of courses around Dublin, it's always very impressive to me. I played the Island Club years ago, Portmarnock. You have Royal Dublin. You have Druids Glen. You have outside, further south, you have the European Club, a very challenging links course. Padraig Harrington and a lot of pros go there often to prepare for an Open Championship. Mount Juliet, a course called Ross Clare, the K Club, where the Ryder Cup was played, and they just hosted the Irish Open there last year. There's just so many different courses right in Dublin, but it's nice to kind of get away and get up north to Northern Ireland as well. What did you think of Ardglass? What a spectacular just venue for golf. Ardglass Golf Club. I mean, it's just so dramatic.
Ardglass is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. I mean, I will never forget pulling in and seeing this castle. It was almost like something out of the medieval movie. And you get into the parking lot and you see this castle is the clubhouse. And I have to say, that first tee shot is the most intimidating tee shot I've ever faced in my life. You've got the Irish Sea to your left. The castle clubhouse is right behind you, so you have everybody watching, and it looks like you just have a narrow strip of grass to land your tee shot on. Granted, it's a short 340-yard par four up the hill, but it also makes things a little more difficult when you've got a 25-mile-an-hour prevailing wind in your face. But just a spectacular golf course. Every single hole so memorable. We actually had Daniel, who, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Paul, the pro at Ardglass, his brother, looping for us. He was fantastic, giving us all this great insight, knowledge about the course. And that is a golf course that I encourage everybody who is taking a trip to Ireland to play, because the topography, the vistas, and the routing is spectacular. And what I'm really excited for Ardglass is they continue to make improvements. And so I'm excited to go back and see how their new par. What is it? It's going to be the 16th hole. It's going to be a par five. It's currently a par four, but they're making some renovations. They also have a couple of new holes. But what also amazed me about this golf course is you could not tell that these were new golf holes. It feels like they've been there for 100 years, and that's something really special for that golf course.
Good point. The 10th hole went from a par 3 to a par 4, and they put in on the 17th, there's a brand new par 3 there because mm-hmm. there's a house on the left that used to get just pummeled by golf balls when it was a par 4. I mean, you can see dents in like the structure of it, and so they basically turned it into a brand new hole, a par 3, which is stunning, so that house came out of play. Which I thought
so
was
funny,
great.
Right?
But there is a huge golf development plan going on there, and Paul Vaughn, the director of golf operations and the head pro, does a great job there. And then, of course, we get up to Royal County Down, and Kevin Whitson, who has been the head pro there for 30 years, he will be stepping down after the Irish Open after this season. And boy, what a championship links course, Royal County Down. What were your thoughts about playing Royal County Down, Jack? I mean, was that spectacular or what?
I think Royal County Down is the most beautiful course I've ever played. It is also the most challenging course I've ever played. It was impossible. And Anne, I had the great fortune of playing alongside you at Royal County Down. And we lost a lot of golf balls.
Hey, speak for yourself.
But yes, exactly.
You have to have a good caddy who kind of helps you out a little bit sometimes, giving you a better lie, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Absolutely, right. But no, Royal County Down, that is a place that I will hold near and dear to my heart forever. And genuinely one of the most spectacular places I've ever been. And, you know, I am so excited to watch the Irish Open in September, because I think Royal County Down is really going to test the pros. And even our caddy Kyle said, he goes, I don't know if many guys are going to be under par. And I envision Royal County Down playing similarly to how Royal Troon played at the Open this year with those crazy conditions. Even Kyle remarked how the conditions in September aren't great. And we experienced that firsthand. We saw the weather come right down from the Moore Mountains and blanket us with some rain and wind over the first couple holes, and that really added to the challenge of the golf course. But that's Irish golf right there.
Yeah, and I mean, we had 5 seasons in a day on that course. That was probably the worst weather we had. But yet, you know, the rain comes, and then all of a sudden the sun comes out, and you get wet, and then you get dry. And, you know, it's just that's the elements there. If you're in Ireland, Scotland, you know, England, that's what you're dealing with. And you know, Northern Ireland's pride for Rory McIlroy is so obvious, so much so that there are framed sketchings of him in each bathroom in the guest rooms at Slieve Donard Hotel. And I just thought that was really an interesting touch. They just adore, why wouldn't they? Rory from that area obviously grew up there. Having, you know, this sketching of him in the bathroom, in the hotel room was pretty funny. But anyway, real quick, because we only have a few, you know, a few more minutes here, and I want to get to so many other stories. But, you know, the Olympics, let's switch quickly to the Olympics. The men start this Thursday, the women's tournament is a week from Thursday. How do you feel about golf in the Olympics, Jack, and about the format?
I love how golf is back in the Olympics. I think it certainly holds a place in the Olympics. It'll be fun to see these men and women play Le Golf National, which is where the 2018 Ryder Cup was held. I do hope in the future, and I believe there's been discussions about this for 2028 at LA, which Riviera will host, about incorporating a team event. I think team play certainly has a role in the sport, as you see in the Ryder Cup, President's Cup, and even on Live Golf, some of their teams. But it'd be really cool to have a team component, whether it's a team match play format somehow or team stroke play. That would be cool, because right now it's just like a regular old PGA Tour event with 60 players, 72-hole stroke play. And it would be cool to see the Olympics differentiate themselves somewhat and create much more of a national unity amongst the team in the future.
I agree. I think it has to be different than most PGA and LPGA Tour events. I'm not a big fan of team play in Live, but at the Olympics, where you do represent your country, and everybody's so proud to qualify, those who qualify to represent their country, and I just think it would be just, you know, more indicative of what the Olympics is all about if there was a team competition rather than, you know, an individual competition. And then I also wanted to ask you, Jack, about, you know, player of the year. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler having a magical season. Xander Schauffele winning two major championships and trying to repeat as gold medalist. What if you had to pick, you know, right now, who would be your player of the year, Scottie Scheffler or Xander Schauffele?
Right now, I'm leaning Scottie, but Ann, as you said earlier in your show, if Xander wins the gold medal this week, I think it's his. And now we've got a really cool little rivalry here to talk about over the course of the next week. And what if Scottie or Xander, neither of them win this week? Then we kind of have a storyline developing throughout the FedEx Cup playoffs in August to see who comes out on top at the end of the year, because both players have been so spectacular. My goodness, Xander has really launched himself into a whole different stratosphere by winning two majors, both of which have came so quickly at the blink of an eye. He goes from being the best player on the planet to not winning a major to all of a sudden he's right up there with Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm winning two. So it'll be a unique storyline to follow this week. But as you said earlier, I completely agree with you. If Xander wins the gold medal this week, I think the scale tips in his favor.
Well, Jack, keep up the great work. I enjoy your writing. Let's do it again, and we'll talk about a ton of other issues in golf next time you come on.
Thanks so much, Ann.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Yanni Yair, who is the Executive Vice President of Development for the Israel Tennis and Education Centers Foundation, ITEC, and a proud graduate of the program. Welcome to Sports Interview.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be part of the interview, and I appreciate this marvelous opportunity.
So tell me about Israel Tennis and Education Centers Foundation. It just seems as if it's just an incredible foundation doing so many positive things in Israel and beyond to support children in so many ways.
Yes, the Israel Tennis and Education Centers is the largest social service for children in Israel. We serve close to 20,000 children annually. And for many of the children that we serve, the Israel Tennis and Education Centers is way beyond tennis. I think what makes us so unique and incredible that we serve children of all backgrounds and religions. So at our tennis centers, or as I like to say, the community centers, we have children that are Christians, that are Muslims, that are Jewish, that are Bedouin, that are Druze. This is how beautiful Israel is. It's diverse, it's a melting pot, and the Israel Tennis and Education Center is providing this marvelous opportunity for these children to interact, to build friendship, to respect one another, and we hope that the better future will be in the very near future.
Indeed, as I was reading through all the literature, the Israel Tennis and Education Centers Foundation is truly a bridge, really to bridge the divide between culture, class, ethnicity, socioeconomic disparity. So you're doing a lot of good in the world.
Thank you. That is very important for us. We feel that tennis is a great vehicle to bring together children, to build the bridge. And what we do at the tennis center, again, is the opportunity for them to really learn and respect one another through sports activities, through educational activities. We get the parents involved, and we feel that we prepare these children for life. These children are the future leaders of Israel, and I think we're giving them the right values and life skills to succeed in life and to represent Israel and do, you know, excellent work in anything that they do in their future lives.
So the ITEC has been around for a while, right?
Yes, the first center was founded back in 1976. Six visionaries that thought about what can we do to improve the quality of life of children in Israel. How can we inspire them? That goes back to some of the very tough times that Israel experienced after the Yom Kippur War in 1973, that Many people ask, you know, should we stay in Israel? What should the future bring? Should we raise our children in Israel? And these six visionaries thought about what can we do for the country? How can we make sure that families stay in Israel? How can we provide some quality life for the families in Israel? And they felt that sports, in our case, tennis, would be the vehicle. We started with one center in Ramat Sharon outside of Tel Aviv. And today we have 24 locations around the country. And most of the centers are intentionally located in underprivileged neighborhoods to keep the kids off the street and provide them with the social work that we do.
So there are 24 centers across Israel, the ITEC, correct?
Yes, 24 locations. Some of them are bigger centers. Some of them are smaller. In some of the locations, we have soccer fields, basketball fields, pickleball fields, courts, sorry. We have educational rooms. We have a place where the kids can get a hot meal. We have computer rooms. So it's like the Boys and Girls Club. It's like a JCC. I like to refer to the tennis centers as community centers because everyone is invited, everyone is welcome, and you don't need to be a great tennis player to benefit and participate in our programs.
And you have a staff of over 300 coaches, fitness instructors, social people, psychologists. I mean, this is a not just tennis you're talking about. You're talking about really helping these young people learn and grow in every aspect of life.
Yes, it's a huge operation. And as you described, you know, we have so many professionals involved, and we are proud that we can help these children, mentor them, provide them tutors, give them the mental support now in Israel during these very, very tough days. We have extra professionals that help the children that are suffering from anxiety, from stress. And we have a lot of staff, personnel that is really impacting and helping the children during these very difficult times. And again, the focus of education, the focus of mental support is a big and significant part of who we are and what we do.
I would think since the horrible day of October 7th, the ongoing war against Hamas, this organization is so needed, not only to teach these skills in athletics, but as you mentioned, to, you know, support these young people who I'm sure are full of anxiety and nerves and fear.
Yes, October 7th was a devastating day. It was a shocking day. I can tell you that that the ITC was one of the first organizations to react due to our structure and experience and professional staff. We were able to immediately reach out to thousands of children and families and check on them. And when the kids couldn't come to the tennis centers due to the missiles, due to the war, we were able to designate special vehicles and professionals that went out there to meet the children and families and see what the need is for these families. We brought them hot meals. We had some mental support, and we made sure that we are in touch with all the children. The centers at the beginning were closed because of the missiles and war. But once, you know, we were able to open again, hundreds of kids, thousands of families came back to the centers. In each center, we have bomb shelters. For many years, we raised money through campaigns, Rackets No Rockets, and made sure that our children safe. And during this tough times, the children are safe at the centers due to the campaign of having shelters in place and protecting these children.
I would think centers like this are needed more than ever as safe havens, not only physically but psychologically for these young people. And we're talking about children who are what, ages 8 to 14, who are so influenced at such early ages by what's happening in the world, what's happening on social media, what they're seeing, and just making a big difference in a positive way with these young people is just crucial.
Yes, absolutely. We believe that educating the young generation is so important, and providing the opportunity for them to succeed in life will help create, you know, better leadership. I'm proud to tell you that through the years, the organization provided opportunities to many of our graduates to come and study here in the United States. Through their tennis skills, they were able to get a full ride and study in universities here, and again to earn their degree. Right now in college, we have a Bedouin Arab who grew through the Living Together Coexistence Program. We are very proud, and he brings the beautiful story about Israel, what an impact the organization made on his life. And there is a better way and a better life, you know, by living together. And he's a true ambassador for this for this program. And hopefully many others will have the opportunity to come and study and get their education. And again, you know, giving the opportunities for all children in Israel is truly important for us.
Certainly not everyone who goes to the tennis program becomes a professional, but you do have some true success stories, right? Can you talk about some of the star tennis players who perhaps have come out of this Israel Tennis and Education Center program?
Yes. Through the years, we were fortunate to have some incredible players on tour, both on the men's and ladies. I'll start with the ladies. I'm sure that many of the audience are familiar with the name Anas Mashnova and Shachar Pierre, who played, represented Israel at the US Open and other big tournaments around the world. Shachar was top 11 in the world at her prime. Anna was top 15 in the world at her prime. And then on the men's side, we go back to the days of Shlomo Glickstein and Amos Mansdorf and Andy Ram and Jonathan Erlich, who won the Australian Open in doubles back in 2008. And of course, Dudi Sela, who played for many years on the tour and was a terrific player, Harel Levy, and many, many others. So we were able to create some incredible professionals who played on the tour, represented Israel, and became a role model for many of the children in Israel.
I covered many of those players you mentioned for my radio station. They all, you know, played in the U.S. Open here in New York. And what a pleasure to see that they spent time at the Israel Tennis and Education Center. Is that where they learned the game?
Yes, this is where they learned the game. This is where they received all their incredible values and life skills. And I'm sure that you experience, you know, how well-behaved they are and how they are handling themselves to really be ambassadors around the world for Israel, for the programs. And I think that is a significant achievement. Of course, becoming a famous tennis player is terrific, but for us, it's so important that these players also be great human beings and wonderful ambassadors. And all of them are absolutely extraordinary.
Yanni, are these programs after their schooling, or does it replace their actual education as well?
So most of the programs take place in the afternoon, from 1 o'clock when children finish their school in Israel till about 9 and sometimes 10 o'clock at night, when their parents are able to come and pick them up from their activities. For some children, they do come to the center at 6 o'clock in the morning before going to school, and then again coming after school to the tennis center. So there are some children that spend 7-8 hours a day at the center. And again, they get way beyond the tennis curriculums, and it's a safe place for them to be.
And have you expanded here in the United States at all?
So what we do here in the United States is more tennis events, tennis exhibitions, where we bring delegations from Israel 3 times a year that we can share our meaningful and powerful message with our supporters, with our friends. And this summer we'll have a few events coming up. I'm going to have a terrific, diverse delegation from Israel who will showcase their skills, but more important, they will speak about their life in Israel. They will speak about the impact that the organization has on their life and the opportunities that ITEC is providing them. So we are always looking to come to new communities, bring the delegation, or as I like to say, the ambassadors, interact with people so they can learn about the significant work that we do and how relevant ITC is during these very tough times.
Talk about some of the fundraisers that you will be doing right here in the Hamptons.
So in the Hamptons, we are fortunate to have an event in West Hampton Beach on Friday, August 16th, and then a couple of private events as well on August 17th, a private home in Southampton, on August 24th, a private home in Sagaponack, and then again a private event on August 25th in Southampton. Beside the Hamptons, we'll also travel to Minneapolis and Scarsdale, New York. This will complete the August cycle, and then the next team will be coming in March when we cover the Florida state.
And I understand Brenda Axelrod will be one of the honorees.
Yes, Brenda and her family are longtime supporters of the organization. We feel honored and fortunate to have them as part of the family. And we want to recognize Brenda's tremendous care and love for the children in Israel and her generosity. And we're going to honor her on August 17th at our event. The meaningful funds that will be raised for that event will be to operate an oasis of joy at one of our centers in Israel. The oasis of joy is a special a space for children and parents to spend many, many hours. This is a space where we give these children hot meals, computer games. They can meet mentors, psychologists, and just interact with friends.
I know Brenda and her daughter Lisa Konsker has they've been just tremendous supporters of the Israel Tennis and Education Centers Foundation. And tell me more about your trip here to the Hamptons, because these programs are so meaningful. Where can people, you know, get involved or learn more about what you're doing out here on the East End of Long Island?
Fantastic. So if anyone is interested to attend, to participate, they can either call us at 954-480-6333 or email us at yyair@itecenters.org. And I will be delighted to invite them to participate, to attend, to meet our diverse delegation, to interact with them. In some of the events, we have the opportunity to hit with them some tennis balls, and would love people to come and learn about the work we do and the importance of it.
Sure, the work is extensive. The Israel Tennis and Education Centers Foundation, I mean, just from reading these programs again, you're teaching girls empowerment, you're building self-esteem, self-worth. You have a special needs program. There's so many programs as under the umbrella of the foundation, right? That you're affecting and influencing in such a positive way so many young people.
Yes, I think this is a part of who we are, and what we do is providing the opportunity to everyone in Israel to be part of it. I think our social impact programs are extraordinary, are impactful. And as you described, we have designated programs for living together, where we bring children of all backgrounds together to participate. We have an Ethiopian empowerment program for immigrants who came to Israel from Ethiopia. We have the girls empowerment program, and that is so remarkable. And Children at Risk is a significant and important program that we have. And we have many other social impact programs. So any child in Israel can actually be part of it. And again, we have so many designated and diverse programs at our centers.
And the website is itecenters.org. So you can learn more about this incredible foundation and their work throughout Israel, impacting in such a positive way. Thousands of young people, they are coming here to the Hamptons August 18, 19. That sounds like you'll be here for the whole weekend doing some fundraising programs and educating people out here about the just the incredible programs and how you really touch and positively influence young people, the Israel Tennis and Education Centers. Yanni, thank you so much for sharing this incredible program with our audience, and continued success. I think now more than ever, we need to get behind the work of the Israel Tennis and Education Centers Foundation and really promote peace and bridge that gap, as you say, that divide between cultures, class, ethnicity, and socioeconomics disparity. We really have to all pull together and do good work and teach young people that a bridge is so important and possible, correct?
Beautiful. Well said. And thank you for this marvelous opportunity. And I appreciate your passion about our cause. And again, invite your audience to join us the weekends of August 16th and the 24th to meet the delegation. And of course, when people travel to Israel, we would love for them to come to our centers and see them firsthand, to interact with the kids. There isn't anything like seeing it firsthand. It is an extraordinary organization. And what we do at the Israel Tennis and Education Center is strengthening Israel through the children, through the values and life skills that we are providing them.
Yanni Yair, again, thank you so much for being on Sports Interview, the Executive Vice President of Development for the Israel Tennis and Education Centers Foundation. And once again, that website to get more information is itecenters.org. Thanks again, Yanni.
Beautiful, and shalom.
Hey, I'll be speaking and signing my new book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf, which features 12 golf legends sharing fascinating and seldom heard stories about their careers, in addition to wisdom they bring from their iconic golf careers to their day-to-day lives. This book is for everyone. Golfers will love it. Non-golfers will certainly be inspired by the universal uplifting themes. My talk takes place on Wednesday, August 21st, from 1 to 2:30 at Rogers Memorial Library at 91 Cooper's Farm Road in Southampton. Seating is limited, so call the library now to reserve at 631-283-0774. That's August 21st, 1 to 2:30 at Rogers Memorial Library in Southampton. Look forward to seeing you there. My thanks to Allison Metcalf, to Jack Milko, and to Yanni Yair. As Henry Ford once said, and I love this quote, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Think about that. So true. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I look forward to visiting with you next time right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.
It's a bittersweet